Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Brian, who is here to give us our next installment of the update on the Zen Monastery Peace Center's sustainability efforts. Welcome, Brian.
Hello.
Hey. How are you?
I am quite good, actually. Happy to be here and not have technological difficulties.
It is nice
happy.
When it all comes together, isn't it?
Yeah, happy to see things working.
So, what is going on in the world of sustainability in the Zen Monastery Peace Center, other than zero rain?
Well, not much, actually. I thought we might talk about that for a moment, because it's a fun little bit of sort of letting life work at life's pace.
Okay, great.
Because, you know, it's winter, and other than waiting for rain, there's not a lot to be done. Most of what's happening is, like, setting up compost piles. We're working on setting up a no-till reach bed and whatnot. But, you know, once the logs are in the ground and the compost is set up, there's a lot of waiting. And it's out of the season for starting new plants is the first time in like a year that I don't have my indoor germination station going, because I just have to wait so that my new plants will have good sun when I have to take them outside. And so it's a really fun kind of look at the information that's coming in, that I got to be doing something. There's got to be something I can, when life's unfolding.
Life's unfolding in the way, yeah. And we've talked about it actually a couple of times on the show, of how in winter, there's, you know, in our culture, we tend to resist that sort of thing. We just plow forward and we heat everything like crazy. I mean, I think of people who, you know, go from their heated house to their heated garage to their heated car to their, you know, heated indoor garage at work, and, you know, never experience actual winter. But that if we kind of slow down and just see what's going on, there is quite a lovely sort of a message from life of, so we're pausing for a while here.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity, again, like everything, to see sort of some of the systems that go on to make us not enjoy that experience. You know, I that's what I deal with at this sort of time, is that it's like I want to be doing something, and in that want, there's a lot of opportunity actually to get to a place where it's not fun to not be doing something, and that doesn't lead me to a place of doing something when the time arises for doing.
Oh, that is very well put. And you know, Brian, as you're saying that, it takes me all the way back to, I think it may have even been the first time we had you on the show. Was it a year ago? Gosh. But a while back, where I can't remember how you said it very eloquently, and I wish I could remember the phrasing, but it was based essentially that living in relationship with egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is the ultimate not sustainable thing. And that it feels like what you're pointing at is that that's a huge piece of why our planet's in trouble, is that we're unwilling as humans, for the most part, to just be with the rhythms of the seasons and what life is doing, and instead we use incredible amount of resource to kind of buffer ourselves from what's actually going on.
Yeah, and that's a really huge part of what sustainability practices is about, is building on what nature's doing in a way that harmonizes with the way that nature does things, as opposed to resisting what nature is doing in service to some sort of artificial vision of what's possible.
Right.
So with the, you know, with the food forest, with composting, with systems like that, it's a lot of, okay, what does nature do and where does it head, and how can we tweak and give a nudge here and there that accelerates that process? You know, composting is a big part of what's going on in all the projects right now, because it's something that happens all year round. And, you know, it is just observing the fact that everything decays.
Yeah.
You know, everything dies, everything decays. That is a just slightly exothermic process, right? So it generates a bit of heat. if we put a lot of stuff that's doing that process in the same place, it generates a fair amount of heat, and that accelerates those same processes. So, you know, it's a very much a put in a little bit of effort to work with going in the direction that nature's going, and then kind of sit back and let it do its thing.
And it's really, really fun to have front row seats. I love watching my own reaction to compost. When I, you know, after something's been composting a long time and reach in there, it just, wow, it just looks like nice dirt. And just that kind of marvel at, yeah, well, where do you think all this stuff is coming from and going to? And it's all the same. It's such a tangible experience of it's all the same suchness. You know, it all returns to the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, there's so much fun stuff going around composting. I'm not the person who needs to be sold on composting. You know, and just seeing how then that becomes a space where animals can hang out. You know, I've met so many critters in compost. At one point at the monastery, I flipped a compost pile and a neon colored lizard came out of it, and a snake and a frog in one go, in addition to all the worms and the, you know, multi-legged critters and whatnot.
Wow.
You know, it's just fun to see how participating in nature that way can really be something that helps us, and it helps with the spaces that we're trying to build, and it helps the critters that make a little habitat there along the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's just very life-affirming.
It's such good evidence that what we're doing is actually working with nature. You know, so instead of things dying off, they're actually thriving and being attracted to it, you know, the critters.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
One of the things that I'm really excited about is, you know, so the lack of rain, not excited about that, but because of it, I mean, it's almost getting to sort of dairy point, at least out here in California. And so it's really having us, you know, bump up to the top of the sustainability conversation. What can we do even more in terms of capturing rain? And we're beginning to talk about, you know, roof. What's the term? Roof catchment?
Catchment, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been sort of trying to sell folks on the idea of a French drain system, actually, which is really interesting, because from, you know, as a person experiencing a place where there's French drains, it's like there's just a strip of gravel. What's going on? And it's actually a half pipe is buried at an incline along an area where water drops on top of it. So, you know, the roof line, water drops in a pretty clear line on I think it's the east lawn every year. It's kind of like you can just see a divot going right through the grass where the water's dropping on it.
Yeah.
And so you just dig down from that divot, you know, like 4 inches wide, and you put a half pipe down there, and then you just fill it back up level with gravel. So instead of that divot, you just have gravel there, and it's totally flat, and people can't, you know, fall over or hurt themselves on it. But then under the gravel, the water is just passing right along through, goes into the pipe, and we can send it off to, you know, a catchment tank somewhere or something like that. So that, you know, it's a little less troublesome, I think, than putting gutters up, I imagine. I don't know, actually. I'm not... construction's not really my bag.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's a really fun idea. And you could... I mean, the monastery roof is huge, so potentially, I imagine, we could get a lot of water off of that.
Yeah, I did the calculations in metric, because it was easier, but I think I eyeballed it being like 2,000 liters from a 10-centimeter... rain event or something like that. I mean, somewhere in that order of magnitude. It's actually surprising how much water is moving off of just a standard roof, even, let alone the monastery's roof. And, you know, it's always interesting for me to think about, actually, with sustainability stuff like that, because it's, you know, it's not free. That goes somewhere. And you know, support some systems, but there's certainly some amount of it that we could take for our systems that wouldn't have a large deleterious effect somewhere else. You know, every time I'm out collecting up leaves to make compost, you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, these leaves left where they were would have eventually turned into soil there, but sometimes have to question, do we really need soil there as much as we need, you know, soil in this bed? What's going to be the trade-off there? And
you know,
we don't need so much soil on the road.
Yeah, exactly. And what I really appreciate about that attitude of mind is it's conscious. You know, so we think, you know, oh, it's great, catch the water from the roof and, you know, use it to water the such and such. You know, that's a great idea. Yeah, it is a great idea. And not stopping there, but actually continuing the inquiry deeper and deeper and deeper to really look at, okay, yeah, where was the water going and what was that? And so so that we don't end up having a, you know, an impact that we didn't intend to have in our efforts to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, a lot of what is not sustainable in our society is sort of the things that happen because of the law of unintended consequences. Like, we're doing this really good thing, but we're not thinking about the second and third and fourth order consequences that are a little harder to get to. And sometimes the impact of those is greater than the positive impact of whatever it is we're doing.
Boy, I think you could just see that in the whole history of development, huh? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that's one of the things that's exciting and unique about sustainability in the context of practice, is that practice, especially in the form of the guide, really offers us that perspective that for many of us doesn't come naturally, where, you know, how many meetings have I been in on things like this where especially Sherry will ask a question that I just never would have considered. And so I think it's a really powerful combination to have those things together, the sort of traditional sustainability efforts along with the conscious compassion and awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's not a stretch to say that practice makes anything better.
Right, good point.
Perhaps practice makes everything better. But it is really quite interesting, actually, to think of it in that light of, you know, just the attention and care that's being brought to something and how that really makes, making a positive change in the world possible.
Yeah.
I can't remember where I read it, but some very cool figure, I think, said, you know, if you want to do good, you have to be good. You know, it's not enough to have a good intention and just start making moves in the world. You really have to do the work to make sure that you are in a good place and coming from a good place and attending to the possible consequences of your action and really caring about the possible consequences of your action.
Yeah. Boy, that B, that B good is everything, isn't it? Wow. Well, Brian, thank you so much for being with us again.
And thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again soon, I hope. Keep on
absolutely.
Keeping on and have a good rest while it's here.
Yes,
okay.
And pray for rain.
Pray for rain, exactly. Thanks, Brian. Good night. All right, Michael, we'll pass it over to you and Sherry.
Great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Brian. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. That was some kind of inspiring, wasn't it?
That was great. Mind expanding.
You know, if we weren't talking right now, I'd be Googling the whole notion of it's not enough to do good, you have to be good. Or
yeah.
In order to do good, you have to be good. Wow, that'd rock you back on your heels, wouldn't it? That,
yes.
It just captures the whole darn thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So being good would lead naturally to whatever is appropriate, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing or not doing.
Yeah. Even not doing would be doing good.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Oftentimes, yes.
Yeah. Well, in the way Jen and Brian were talking about, you know, there's not a lot to do right now in the kind of sustainability work that they were talking about. And so that not doing can be just as conscious as the doing. And as Brian was saying, you know, how we are here in this time is going to inform how we are then, the attitude of mind that we're bringing to this kind of, what, there's an expression for it, fallow period, is that?
It is
the same attitude of heart and mind that we're going to bring to what we're doing when things begin to, when it does rain, and there is more that we can be involved in.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. It's a regenerative, quieter time.
Yeah.
Great.
Which can include praying for rain. As a matter of fact, I just received an invitation from a local church here in Calaveras, here in Murphy's. They're going to do sometime in February or March a day of meditation and prayer for rain.
Wow.
And so I thought, well, they're so much less cowardly than I am, or they're so much braver, however we want to phrase that. Because I really wanted to talk to people about doing a energetic, bringing rain. You know, Native people did that, and quite successfully. They were able to accomplish that. So it seems to me like we could, but it sounds so New Age and basically wacky that I thought, who am I going to talk to that is going to go along with that? And then I thought, well, the local Christian community would be a good place. So the only thing that I want us to do is get started a little earlier. February, March, that's a late start. Now, I realize they're organizing something, but those of us who aren't organizing anything, I mean, we'll participate certainly, but we're not organizing it. And so we can start right now. And
yes.
Every day can be that request for rain, because truly everything and everyone really needs it at this point.
Yes, yes. So you're
so
my, the whole sangha.
Yeah, exactly. But my vision, Michael, is to end like with the Rockies. Now, I could be wrong about this, so maybe people can help me with it. But I don't think we want to bring any more rain to the Midwest. And somebody was just telling me what's happening on the East Coast and into the South, and probably they don't need any more right now. So we'll just concentrate on this third of the North American continent, and then anybody else who's really in need can let us know, and we'll extend our success here to other places.
Great.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
It's something to do while we're not doing the things we would be doing if we had rain.
Yes, yes. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I
you
have
an announcement
here. Good timing. Registration is now open for the brand new retreat, the Zen of Rumi.
Right. The
this
Zen of
Tuesday.
Rumi.
Yes, this is a Tuesday through Friday retreat at the end of February, and we'll explore how the poems of Rumi hold wisdom for our practice.
Mm. Mm. Such a match.
Yes, and that's in the Bay Area, and all the information is at schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Mm. Yeah, I'm excited about that one. What else is coming up?
Well, as you know, this very Sunday, January 19th, join us for the free video workshop that will kick off our year-long theme, which is Upping Your Game.
Yes.
The workshop is free, but we ask you to register at schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a technological thing about that, right? We have to know who's going to be there and who isn't. So
I think so,
hopefully.
Yep.
People will sign up.
Great.
Good. It's going to be fun.
Yes, it will be. And a couple of reminders. Our call-in number is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406. And then enter your PIN followed by pound. And if folks can focus on one topic, please, in 5 minutes, that's really helpful. So let's get started.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Sherry. It's Jodine in San Francisco.
Hello, hi. Jodine.
Hi. I am very happy to call in, say Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I was the first caller in 2013. And what I talked about was a little bit spooky when I went back and listened to it. And so I decided I didn't want to be the first caller in 2014. So I'm calling in week two.
Now, Jodine, what was the description? It was a little bit what?
It was a little bit spooky.
Spooky?
I called in spooky.
Oh, spooky. Gotcha.
Spooky, yeah. I called in and said I felt like my life was about to move in some different direction, but I wasn't sure what that was, and I wanted to be ready for it. And I was thinking I was going to find a new job, and that is not where it went.
Uh-huh. Your intuition was accurate. The content was quite a bit different than you thought.
Quite a bit, yeah. So I'm not going to predict anything about this year. I just wanted to tell you about something really fun that happened with awareness coaching.
Oh, good.
And this is the how you do anything is how you do everything story. So
okay.
In awareness coaching, I make a commitment or one or two or more each week as part of the program.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, kind of watch what happens as the week then, you know, unfolds.
Yeah.
And
uh-huh.
And what was going on was I was not able to fulfill these commitments, and some of them I would and some of them I wouldn't. And the ones that I didn't fulfill ended up on this list of leftover commitments. And
uh-huh.
that list got to be very long after I'd been doing coaching for a while.
Uh-huh.
And so what I decided for 2014, my New Year's resolution, was that I was going to categorize these things and pick an easy one and a hard one each week and just focus on getting them all done, because they all seemed like, you know, things I would like to do.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so in the first week, I did the easy one, and then I didn't get to the hard one, and right before my call with my coach, I was sitting there and I was thinking about, okay, well then what am I going to commit to this week because I didn't do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And conditioning dropped in and was saying, well, you should do it, plus you should pick another hard one and another easy one for week two, and you should do all of those things, and you should do that in a week, like, you know, as if the one that was left over was going to get done in some kind of no man's land where it, like, didn't take any time or something.
Aha.
And then I woke up in the middle of the story, right? I was like, wait a minute. You know? And then this huge awareness dropped in that this is how conditioning runs me around in my entire life. Do you see it?
Jodine,
uh-oh.
We just lost the guide.
Okay.
So let's pause a moment and wait for her to return here.
Okay.
Okay, I think you both are back here.
Hi.
Hi, I'm here.
That was epic and dramatic. What have you people been up to? So, Jodine.
I don't know where you dropped.
Okay, the last thing I heard is that conditioning said, so what you should do is another hard thing and another
yeah.
easy thing.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago, wasn't it?
Well, luckily I didn't go on that much longer before I said something to you and you didn't say anything back.
Okay. So what happened after that?
So I saw that I kind of woke up in the story and I realized that this is how conditioning runs me in my whole life, basically. Like, I have this persistent process that leads to, conditioned behaviors and feeling bad, where I basically have this giant sack that I'm carrying around of all this stuff that I feel like I should be doing. And so it's like I constantly feel, overburdened.
Yeah.
And it's really easy for conditioning then to, to say that I'm the wrong person, because the right person does these things when she says she's going to do them, get some done, and what's wrong with you because, look at this list.
Okay. I have to, I'm an examples person. So give me an example, would you, of some of the things, two or three of the things that are on this list that you don't do and therefore are not the right person?
Oh, okay. Good question. You're going to love this. So at some point, I had been listening to the archives of the radio show and had one of these kind of mystical experiences where I just chose one randomly and it spoke exactly to the process that was current with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it continued, and actually it was part of a 2-week series of the radio show, and the whole thing just was so relevant. And so I wrote down the dates of those, and I was going to put those together in a playlist and add it to a time when I called you about the process and you were guiding me, and so I was going to so recording and listening things that I would like to do. I would get guidance, from Guidance Day, and have, something that I thought would be a good idea to kind of institute, a little practice. What are some of the other things on it? There seems to be a lot of resistance to those things. And then easy things order myself a book on tape from Keep It Simple. That I just hadn't gotten around to doing. Is that kind of answering your question?
So actually, these are things you would like to do.
There are things I would like to do, and I just haven't gotten around to them.
Right, but the it is part of what you're talking about here, that these are things that you want to do, and then they get made into things that you need to do, and they get then called commitments, and then there's things you should do, and then there's resistance to doing them, so you get talked out of doing them, which then makes you a bad person.
That's pretty much it.
See, to me, a commitment would be spend 5 minutes each day doing something that supports my practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have those. I have some core commitments.
Yeah, because, Jodi, otherwise you're talking about a to-do list.
Well, see, this is the thing. Like, they Like, yeah. Well, I don't know. You're seeing a distinction. I'm not sure I'm seeing it.
Well, a commitment.
Like something that I do every day.
Yeah, well, a commitment. So if you make a commitment that you're going to arrange this playlist, and that becomes something you're going to do on a particular day,
mm-hmm.
that becomes overwhelming in a big hurry, as you've noticed.
Yeah, well, it's like I have a week. You know, each week I'm looking at the week. So it's not like a particular day, but, yes, within a week.
So within a week, you would create that playlist?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so if the commitment were, I don't know, maybe I just have a different view of practice commitments. But to me, a practice commitment is not a specific item on a to-do list. Because the practice commitment is something that is going to continue much beyond this specific thing that I'm going to do, which is why I was attempting to make it more general. So, you know, if it's a week, then I'm going to, this week I'm going to spend a half hour doing some kind of project that supports recording and listening.
Uh-huh.
Do you see the difference that I'm trying to point at?
So yeah, it sounds like you're saying that that like we used to talk about process goals and what's the other like and content goals or accomplishment goals.
Yeah.
In Best Year Yet. So a process. Yeah. So I have process commitments. For instance. That I spend 10 minutes checking in with my mentor every day.
Uh-huh.
That's a commitment that I always have going on. And then various other commitments. These are like these other commitments that kind of popped up and didn't get done. And I think, I guess one of the things that was so kind of astonishing about this when it kind of like hit me about like this is my whole life is that, you know, I'm going to leave this life with lots of things undone.
Yes.
And so
yes,
absolutely.
So we are.
Yeah. And like
uh-huh.
the conditioning wants me to have my focus on is the content.
Yes.
Did I have these experiences on my bucket list, quote unquote, that I wanted to have? You know, did I accomplish enough to someone's, you know, satisfaction? And it's just so not where life is, right? It's just
exactly. Yes. So we are in total accord. And my encouragement, if this keeps us still in accord, is to no longer think of things to do as commitments.
Okay.
So if I'm going to, I want to clean out my closet. Okay, so I'm not. If I turn that into a commitment and it somehow has something to do with whether or not I'm a good person, that closet's never going to get cleaned out. But if I have if I have a commitment to spend an hour a week doing some task or chore that takes care of me, then that becomes, to me, a different thing.
Okay. Okay, I think I'm seeing a way out of this.
To-do list. This, in quotes, spiritual to-do list.
Right, I mean, like, a lot of it is practice stuff. So there it is, like, using practice against me. So
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
I'm going to... I'm going to look at this then from that slant and see what, if anything, on that list would lend itself to a different way of working with it.
Yeah, because if you realize you're going to leave your life with a lot of stuff undone, which, you know, right there is silliness, right? Because that assumes that we have some sort of agenda that we are here to follow, right? And we know that that's not true. So there'll be a lot of things that I thought of that didn't go from thought to manifestation, to physical being. Yeah, tons of those things, which has nothing to do with whether or not they ever needed to. Should, would have been helpful or good to bring into physical form, right? So, what am I accomplishing? Well, as, you know, people who are attempting to wake up and end suffering, then to me, my list of accomplishments is things like kindness.
Right.
Unconditional love. Not getting lost in stories. Dropping a major karmic fixation. To have a commitment like that. Now, people could say, well, it's hardly measurable. And, well, but you can make it measurable. Absolutely we can make it measurable.
You know, oh, my God, you know what I just thought? I should just practice not doing a single one of these things and watch conditioning go berserk.
Yes, and your commitment could be to record and listen your way through, to be in conversation every day with the mentor about what happens when you are not, when you don't allow yourself to be victimized by karmic conditioning.
Wow. Oh, wow. Great. Okay, that's my homework.
All right. Thanks, Jodine.
Okay, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine. You're listening to Open Air. I just ripped up my to-do list, Sherry.
Very good. And, you know, we've got this out of best year yet, of course, that, you know, when we don't let karmic conditioning turn what we want to do into what we should do and make it that kind of contest, then we do tend to do what we want to do. We get to it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Yeah. Let's hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Priya. I live in Philadelphia.
Hi, Priya.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. How are you guys?
Hi.
Great. And yourself?
I'm good, thank you. I called maybe a year and a half ago. This is my second time calling. It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back. I have been listening, but I just been busy with a toddler, so getting half an hour in the evening to call is a precious time, so I'm glad I can talk to you guys tonight.
Yeah, great. Well, what's going on?
I have a funny story about conditioning in an interesting context, actually. I was just diagnosed with thyroid cancer like a day before, maybe about a couple of days ago. And I'm not scared or anything. I was actually pretty calm about it and have read up on the kind I have. And it's a very, actually one of the most treatable cancers out there, considering
that's what
how
they
many
say.
Different types there are.
Yeah, if they say if you need to have cancer, this is the one to have.
Exactly,
right?
And that's
yeah.
what I was thinking. And then suddenly this voice dropped in my head that's like, I can't believe you only got thyroid cancer. Only the wimpy people get that. The really strong people get stuff like pancreatic cancer. Then I just started laughing so hard, and I was like, oh, my God, conditioning is so hilarious.
Oh, my
God. And it was a really nice moment to just kind of laugh at the voices in my head and be like, everything they say is pretty ridiculous and
yeah.
wrong and hilarious.
Yeah.
And it was just so funny. I had to call in and tell you about it. It made
wow,
me laugh
thank
so
you.
Hard.
Yeah, well, it's funny and it's horrifying at the same time.
Exactly.
I mean, it really does. For anybody who wasn't listening to it in that frame of mind, you know, a message like that, not like that. Yes, it went too far. It really did pick the wrong thing to say.
I know, right?
But to say
I was
something
just so thrown.
To say something so hideous to somebody, we really do get a sense of how ugly and vicious it is.
Yeah.
Mhm. Yeah.
And ridiculous as well.
And how much we really do want to be paying attention, not in a being in relationship with it, but just to be on the lookout because it is trying to sneak in those kinds of messages all the time.
Oh yeah, I've been getting a lot of messages like with regards to who I've told about what's going on and who I've not told. If I tell people, conditioning says you just want pity and you want everyone to think you're special and see who really loves you. And if I don't tell people, they're like, you know, there's always something it has to say, no matter which way you go.
Precisely. Yeah. Now, do you do a recording and listening practice?
I have not done that yet. I actually wanted to try, but I'm a little confused, honestly, as to how it works.
Okay.
With regards to, how it works, exactly.
Okay. We have a book. What's it called? I think it's What You Practice is What You Have. It's devoted to it, and it talks about how to find your mentor and that sort of thing. But for you, with this kind of situation, being with yourself as you go through something like this, because it's gonna have its moments on every side. Then to one of the things that I would want to do if I were in your position is to record the kinds of messages that it gives under the heading of the kinds of ridiculous things that conditioned mind will say or that the voices of self-hate will say. So here's another ridiculous thing that it said. And what is really true is, okay, and then you talk about, this is a difficult thing for anybody. This is, and then however you feel about it, as if it were your best friend that this had happened to.
Yeah.
What would you wish for her? How would you want her to treat herself and talk to herself and be with herself? And, and then when you just want people to, so more ridiculous things the voices say. What's really true is, because you're looking at a deep level at what's really true for you about who you say this to and who you don't say it to. And then what's really true for me is that, and you'll begin to hear the kinds of supportive, encouraging messages that you would like to hear from someone else and that we don't always get from somebody else, but it's right there from the most important person in your life for you to have heading your support team.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Those voices have dropped in. Just Center has dropped in and said, actually, I'm telling people because I want to create a support system for this time in my life that might be a little bit more difficult than other times. And that's all I really needed to hear, is that I'm just creating a support system. And I've heard you mention so many times that ego, his main job is just to separate you from everybody and not have you reach out or create a community for yourself. And I thought about that. I was like, that's what ego's doing to me.
Yeah.
That's very good. It was a good time.
Yeah. And so you would record that, right? So what's actually true is that,
And so you record what conditioning says, and then you kind of listen to that and say, but what is true? And then you record that so you can hear the whole kind of dichotomy of what's going on.
Yes. And then after you're really familiar with what conditioning says, you can just delete that half of the message and just go with the messages that come from center, come from your heart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what you want to hear. I mean, after you
kind of
heard everything it has to say, and you're really clear that no, there's no wisdom or help in any of those messages. So I don't need to listen to those. What I choose to listen to is the voice of center and support and loving kindness and so really you're creating the most intimate support group for yourself. Not that you won't have a lot of other people, but this is one that in the middle of the night, first thing in the morning, last thing before you go to sleep, when you're waiting in a doctor's office, you can have those earbuds in and you can be listening to somebody who's really on your side and there for you.
Yeah. Oh, I will start that then. That'll be my homework.
There you go. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now don't wait a year and a half, okay?
I won't. I can't believe a year and a half has gone by. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, I won't.
I will definitely update you guys.
Yeah.
Sure.
But when you have little people that you're attending to all the time, time does go by rather quickly and things are rather busy.
Exactly. And since I started working, taking like this time in the evening, if I'm at work all day and he's in daycare, I feel like I want to be with him. So.
Yeah. His time. Yep.
Yeah.
His time and your time. Yep. Well, thank you for letting us know. And when and if you can, keep us posted, okay?
I will. And thank you so much for your guidance. I'm really going to follow it. And Happy New Year to all of you guys as well.
Happy New Year, Priya. Take good care, huh?
Thank you. Take care. Bye, Michael. Bye, Sherry. Have a good night.
You too. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Priya. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to hear from our coaches, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael, this is Jen in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jen.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Conditioning is trying to get me a lot, but I wanted to just say thank you for the New Year's retreat. That was such a great, great experience. And yeah, it was amazing. It was such a wonderful way to start the year. In fact, I just felt really clear that I want to do that every year. And, you know, conditioning just has so much to say about, you know, that, of course. But, you know, it just became really clear, because it always, I would kind of fall for, you know, I'm on the East Coast and it's kind of a shorter time and, you know, it's a lot to get the plane ticket for a shorter time and blah, blah, blah. But I just can't tell you what it was just such a wonderful feeling. You know, I had these moments like that first day, you know, as the retreat was ending, just realizing like, wow, it's the first day of the year and I've already been on retreat and been with Sangha and been in with my heart and meditated and, you know, had this wonderful, I mean, it was just the most amazing feeling. So yeah, I'm just so grateful for it. And I want to get there every year. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I mean, we do a lot of retreats that we love. There's no question about it. But
yeah,
that retreat, it's just such a, I don't know what there is about it. I guess it's that. It's, you know, the end of the year, and we're looking at, not that we do this in the retreat particularly, but there's, you know, a whole year behind us of what has happened. And now it's such an obvious, clear beginning.
Yeah.
And to be with Sangha and to be, and of course it was a delightful topic for the retreat.
Yeah.
And all of it, it's just, it just puts us in that place of, all right, okay, life, I'm ready.
Exactly. Yep. Bring it on. Exactly.
Yeah,
oh yeah. Yep. Yep. I've been feeling so excited and watching, you know, there's been tons of backlash, which, you know, is quite predictable, but lots of, I got behind on the Learning to Love Learning calls, but I've been catching up with those, which has also just been really fun and supportive. And I just heard you were talking to someone about the quote of, I think it was kind of the, you know, 8 times fall down, 9 times get up.
Right. The Dorumanal. Yes.
Yes, uh-huh. And I that has been just a mantra for me, because I feel like conditioning is kind of like, I came home just like filled with this energy and, you know, elated and so excited. And, you know, a few times already conditioning has kind of kicked me in the teeth, and, you know, which, as I said, is probably just so to be expected. But I'm just loving that, like, okay, fine. Well, you know, here I am, 9 times get back up. I'm just going to keep getting back up.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And if that is our attitude of mind and heart, you know, it kind of doesn't matter what happens. Because as you say, it's to be expected. That's what's going to happen. It's going to knock us down as often as it can for as long as it can. And our job is just to get up, brush ourselves off, have a good laugh, and take the next step.
Right. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And,
so,
and
yeah.
kind of a, all right, you got me. You got me. So this just reminds me of when my teacher first sent me out to do workshops, and it was such a hideous experience. Oh, my God, it was so hideous. And, you know, I mean, people would ask me these questions and say these things. I had no idea, you know, just no idea whatsoever. And the only thing that I could cling to, and that's exactly what it was, what I was clinging to, is nobody will ever ask me that again and leave me not having experienced it.
Mm.
So between now and when that happens again, if it ever happens again, I will have the experience that is required to be able to at least offer my experience. I can give, I don't know what the answer to the question is, but I can tell you my experience when I have looked as deeply as I could into that question or that issue. And so I would just, you know, leave that workshop, hot foot it back to my teacher and say, what about this? What about this? What about this? You know? And just start practicing with it such that, you know, and with that, then that getting knocked down is obviously a gift. Because if I weren't knocked down in that way, I wouldn't know that was an issue. And at some point, it's going to happen, and I'd like to be prepared for it So I'm as ready today to face this, probably, as I like to say, I'll never be any younger or cuter, and we could add stronger. And so I'm at my height of strength right now, so hit me with it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be ready to pop right on up and get to the bottom of this issue.
Yes, I love that. It so flips, you know, what conditioning it would say. You know, I'm meant to feel bad, which I know we're not doing, but it still is, you know, persistent in trying to get
like
me there.
It would like it, even though we're not doing that any longer.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it means something, and I'm like, you know, why am I not doing it right, and all that kind of stuff. And it's so great just to, wonderful, great, I got, you know, I fell down again. Good, I've seen more about how that falling down happens. And right.
Yeah. In fact, the image I'm getting as you're talking is something that I always wanted to do and didn't, a la Jodine's, you know, this is one of my ambitions that I'm going to leave this life not having fulfilled. But so what? I always wanted to study Aikido. And so the image of, now there I am, you know, I'm going to study Aikido, and the teacher throws me. And I just lie there feel bad. You know, it would just sort of miss the whole point. But I go there knowing that the idea is to be thrown until I learn how not to be thrown, right? And then there will be the next challenge, which it seems to me life is the, you know, is the big Aikido match.
Yeah, maybe I need to put that on my on my list too, Aikido. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
I'm learning how to be thrown. I'm learning how to fall. I'm learning how not to be hurt. I'm learning how to see it coming. I'm learning how to take care of myself. I'm learning how to move out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how to not feel bad when I am laying there with my back on the mat or whatever.
Yeah. In fact, learning how to be excited about the potential. Right? Because, boy, if somebody could do that to me, huh, I could learn to do that too.
Yes, exactly. Oh, thank you. That's such a such a fun
Let
way
us
to
know
work
how it
with
goes,
it,
okay?
So. Yeah, I will definitely. And I have to just say very quickly, I also talked to you at one point about fun. In fact, it kind of ties in with the to-do list stuff, and I'm gonna listen back to what to that previous conversation, because other to-do list things are still getting me. But with some commitments, I'm doing the stick around the calendar thing. Like tonight, I have a glittery red heart sticker that I get to put on my calendar for calling the radio show, because that's something my heart wanted to do. So I'm playing with stickers and commitments, and it's super fun. So I just wanted to report about that too.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. I tell you, I don't you just kind of feel like you're 4 years old or something? And I mean, how could we get that excited about a, you know, putting a heart on the calendar? But
a sticker, yeah.
I
went
exciting.
To the Yes, going to the sticker store was like the most exciting thing. I went to like a, you know, a craft store, and it felt, yes, it was like my four-year-old was right there like, woohoo, you know, I spent like $30 in stickers or something insane, and just had such a good time getting to pick out all these stickers. And
Yeah, it's a whole different relationship with commitment.
It totally is. Yep. Like I said, I really want to look at the day-to-day, because there's lots of other to-dos that seem kind of whatever, but something is shifting around some of these in the stickers, so I know there's possibility. So thank you for that, too.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you
so
much.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Jen. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air, and I think we have time for one more caller, Sherry.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice.
Hey, Janice.
Hey.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you.
That's good. Hey, well, I was calling in because I did the Visiting Monk program last, I guess it was October.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was.
And I just wanted to call in and kind of talk about that experience, because
oh,
it was
good.
very transformative, like right up there in transformative. And
right up there in transformativeness?
Yes, right up there if one were to rank the experiences. But anyway, I don't really know how to verbalize it, but I'll try to summarize it. So when I first got the, you know, like was there for a couple of weeks and different things occurred and just I had certain big questions going on that I had no experiential answer for. Mm-hmm. And just a few of them were, the big thing when I got there, I was looking at how conditioning turns everything into work, you know, like the process of how I want to do something kind of like similar to what Jodine was talking about, but maybe a little different process, but I want to do something, it turns into work. So that was kind of like a big thing I was looking at. And then as I progressed, I was kind of looking at this assumption that I had that I couldn't live in insights, with insights flowing in, unless I was on retreat. You know, I had to be at the monastery to live that way. Uh-huh. And then also the precepts retreat had started, and you were impressing on everyone the gravity of practice and, you know, the gravity of the opportunity that we have to get this. Mm-hmm. And I intellectually understood that, but I really wasn't getting the gravity. And then one other big question that was going on for me was that I was practicing with my attention being on different things, and I had this one amazing Sunday, and just the most amazing day, and I was trying to notice what the difference was the next day, and it was really clear that the difference was that the experience I was having was related to where my attention was. So on that amazing day, my attention was on the expansiveness and the wonder and the beauty and the amazingness of that day, right? So so my experience kept being, you know, wherever my attention is, that's what my experience is. Like, it's that simple. Mm-hmm. And but someone had said, well, why don't you place your attention on awareness? Which left me a little, it's like my experience at that point was that there was always an I there. If my attention, like when
I am placing my attention on awareness.
Right. So yeah. it was just something that happened, but that I couldn't really control. It would most frequently happen if I was on retreat or in an environment where, you know, it's very supportive of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
I got sick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I got sick, and I was just, you know, I didn't feel good for a couple of days. It was no big deal. And then I thought I was fine, went back with the people for a couple of days, and then relapsed into really not doing well. So I spent a fair amount, like a week and a half, just me alone in my, you know, my structure with a kind person bringing me food, but pretty much just there directing my
solitude.
I was in solitude.
Yeah,
and
just you and your attention, yeah.
Me and my, yeah, and just wherever I chose my attention to be. And
mm-hmm.
it was the most amazing experience. I mean, I really got the fallacy of that I had to be on retreat, because a retreat was going on and I wasn't at it. And it was the closest I've ever been to bliss, ever. It was like I made a schedule every day. In my attention, the first day I was having it on excitement and fun, right? So I'm in a 10x8 structure all alone. And I really had that experience. But my schedule was more of, you know, like rest and then specific attention-directing activities, like very specific.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it wasn't specific, I couldn't tell that conditioning had drawn my attention away. So
yes.
And it was just insight after insight after insight, and like the answer that came to me of how do I put my attention on awareness was that's what happens when I direct it away from conditioning. It's just that's, you know, it's like that's all there is.
Uh-huh.
And then I really got the gravity of the situation. And then
say more. How did that connect up for you?
Well, intellectually, I knew other people were getting it because I was there the first day of the retreat, and someone had expressed, "Oh, I just got the gravity." And the way I got that was, there was one night, the night that I relapsed, and I literally could not breathe. I literally was laying flat, and if I had to have a diagnosis, it was the upper respiratory infection, and my body was creating the thickest phlegm that I've ever known and putting it over my breathing tube and my larynx, basically. And so if I was laying down flat, I literally couldn't breathe, like when you inhale powdered sugar or you were to, food goes down the breathing pipe and you can't breathe. So I thought it was the middle of the night, and so I got up and I was going to go ring the bell because conditioning was kind of convincing me that I should just stay there. And I'm like, no, I think I might actually die, and what if I did draw attention to myself, you know? Because a lot of what was going on was fifth chakra conditioning, if you ask me.
Yeah, this would probably be as good a time to draw attention to myself as any.
So I did. I got up, and the bell had moved, and I knew the bell was up. And moving around, I thought, would help, too, just clear up, you know, my lung, everything. And I couldn't find the bell, you know, and so I know someone there. So I went to go try to go directly to their place, and then I couldn't find their place. And then I noticed that there were still lights going, you know, there were lights on, you know, so I just went and got help. But I didn't know that it wasn't like 1 in the morning. So anyway, for whatever reason, that, who knows if it was life or death, but I, at the moment, I thought it was a life or death situation. And it was kind of like, well, that's the gravity of all this. I mean, it's, because in my lifetime, frequently life, I think, has taken my health away when it needs to beat me over the head. Mm. And I think it really needed me to get that I could live in, you know, just by practicing directing the attention to the experience. Since my experience is directly related to where my attention is, practicing where my attention is the most important thing, right?
Yes, and so for me to connect those up, it's possible that you used the word bliss, right? I mean, it was
an
amazing, amazing way to be alive, even
maybe in that cabin forever. Yeah,
even when you're in this little hermitage, and even when you're sick, it's an amazing experience of life. Or we could live a half life, and a lot of people are lucky to get to a half life of following ego around and trying to meet all of its wants and desires and being beaten up regularly and talked into feeling bad. And so we could do that. And the third thing, the third component of your experience, you are going to die.
Yeah.
So between, which you know, you realize that night, good grief, I could lie here and die. And so you didn't. And then we really get a chance to look at, all right, given that I am going to die at some point, how do I want to live? Do I want to learn to direct my attention so that I can live with life in bliss? Or do I want to give my attention to egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate and let it have its life while I just kind of putter along here half dead?
Yeah, exactly. If I could add to the like cabin as a metaphor, I could have been in there with EKC self-hate, or I could be in bliss. You know, like it's a choice.
Yeah.
Being in a cabin for a week and a half with egocentric karmic conditioning, I mean, what kind of hellish.
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying I wasn't. Sometimes I was in and out, but.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like the choice of life.
Yes.
And the fact that I could just be there alone in solitude in an 8x12 structure with some really good food brought to me, but nothing else, and be in bliss.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling.
It is. It is.
And I was on a retreat, but where else would I have a structure, you know?
Well, the thing is, to me, Janice, that it's so hard for us to get is that as long as karmic conditioning can talk us into somewhere, something that it can distract us with, it's going to do it.
Yeah.
So the very
yeah.
fact that you were kind of trapped there gave that opportunity. That's why people get to these places on retreat, because going on retreat, we give up that right to allow karmic conditioning, self-hate, to rule our attention and cause us to be distracted and unfocused. So it really is more available to us once we understand how it works. If we really want to, we can certainly choose to provide that experience for ourselves anywhere in life. Right? Well,
yes.
A person can do it in their own easy chair.
Yes.
If they will. Yeah.
And what I needed most, Life knew, which was intensive direction attention practice.
Yeah, exactly. And being sick is the perfect way to do that. That's why, and I think we're out of time, when people get sick, I don't know if you've ever read The Huber Cure, if we beat you over the head with it when you were there, but that's the whole point of that, is turning being sick, taking being sick away from egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate and using it as an opportunity to have a direct experience of the only thing that's going on is me here being lived by life. All of my attention, all of my energy, all of my focus, all of my thoughts are just right here, right now. And being sick goes from an awful thing to something that you really don't mind and, in fact, kind of have to work not to hope for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm glad. Thank you. Thank you thank you for letting us know that. That's really powerful.
Yeah. Thank you very much for all your guidance. And
oh, it's a pleasure. All right. You
thank
take care,
you, Michael.
Huh?
Bye.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. Wow. What a great show.
Yeah, good people doing great practice. Great people doing good practice.
Yes, and willing to share it all with us.
Yeah, good deal. Next week?
Okay, talk to you then.
Thanks, Michael. Actually, I'll see you Sunday.
Looking forward to it.
All right, thanks, Michael.
Thanks,
Sherry. Good night.
Bye.